And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Oh, man, is it Friday already? You bet it is. Welcome aboard and good morning to the John Gambling Show Friday edition with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning, John. A lot of rain.
Well, you know, hey, could be snow.
Part of the mayor's plan to eliminate the drought.
and also keep the budget intact, right?
Absolutely. You know, all kidding aside, it saves us a lot because snow costs a lot to plow and sand, and then you tear up the roads with the plows, so it costs a lot to fix potholes. So with no snow, may not please the skiers and the cross-country skiers in the city. But from the budget point of view, it's a good deal.
I had a chuckle listening to George in the story about the PAs on the subway platforms. I'm thinking to myself, I mean, I've been hearing the MTA talk about the PA systems being unable to hear them, being not available at all for the past 25 years here in the city. And I was thinking, you know what, maybe now that we have toilets in the city on the street, maybe we'll get PAs.
I wouldn't overstate the toilets. We have one.
I know, and with a total of 20 in the plan, and I said earlier this week, I said 20 toilets for 7 million people, the numbers don't really work.
It really is amazing how people can slow these things down. I mean, public toilets and what's all called street furniture has been on the drawing boards for 20 or 30 years, and we finally got it done, at least the kiosks for newsstands and the free newspapers, or where they sell the newspapers and the automated things, those took forever. But at least we got it done.
Absolutely. The other story this week that I find interesting, the one this morning, is the cloning of the trees. You've pushed, and Adrian Benepe, your parks commissioner, been pushing for planting trees around the city, which I think everybody thinks is a great idea. But cloning them, I have this vision of Adrian in the basement of City Hall, you know, mixing vials and smoke coming out.
It's actually a company that does it for a living. They called. They wanted to do it. It's a good deal because there's a handful of trees, one of which George Washington supposedly slept under and had an apple fall on his head, or maybe that was Newton, but one of those guys back then. And it's a tree that survives very well in the city and gives you a nice combination of leaves and good-looking branches in the winter and all that sort of stuff. And they're offered to clone a bunch of them for us, so sure, why not?
Yeah,
cloning,
no,
turns out, in the tree biz is done every day.
Yeah, I've seen it done, and they also take twigs and put it on a different root system, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So,
No,
it's a great idea. The city will be. While we're talking about city issues, the rat problem. I mean, that's older than the subway PA in the no toilet system.
Rats are a problem in every large city, any place in the world. We spend an enormous amount of money trying to wipe them out, but turns out they're pretty hardy.
They're tough to get rid of.
Somebody was telling me the other day they happened to see a rat. There's this tiny little hole, like the size of a quarter, basically, and this enormous rat manages to come straight through. That they can get in any place.
And unfortunately, there are too many of them in the city. But there is a city program that is ongoing constantly, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Eradication.
We spent a lot of money to get rid of rats. I'm sure there'll be some pro rat complaints, John, that'll come in tomorrow. But nevertheless, we are trying to wipe out. However, I don't think people should worry about us ever succeeding. The chances of wiping out all the rats is, I think, in all fairness, zero.
All right, a couple of stories this week. One which surprised, I'm not sure I'm surprised by it, but I didn't anticipate it, and that was a study out that the city of New York has used more energy than it has in recorded time, I guess. We expand, we get more and more people, I guess we use more and more energy. On top of that, Con Ed looking for a rate hike. What do you think should happen here?
Well, with Con Ed, we can pay now or we can pay later. I mean, they are the only game in town, if you will. The real solution is to use less energy. Con Ed is in the distribution business. They're not in the generation business anymore, so they don't produce any power, but they distribute it, and they are fundamentally the only one that can do it. Their infrastructure is old. In all fairness to them, every study shows they are phenomenally reliable statistically, although if the power in your house goes out, it is little comfort that the guy next door has great reliability. But nevertheless, for a big city, they provide a decent service. And, you know, if you take a look at the stock, the company doesn't make all that much money. It's very controversial. Everybody likes to kick Con Ed. It's, you know, like kicking the MTA. But the bottom line is they don't do a bad job, and they are looking for a rate increase, and they're going to use the money, invest it in more infrastructure, new power lines. And then, of course, people will complain when they dig up the streets to replace the power line. So we'll be right back where we started.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break right here. First one, we'll come right back later in the show. We'll, of course, take your phone calls, 1-800-848-WABC. If you want to get in the queue, 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, coming right back. The John Gambling Show, Mayor Michael Bloomberg edition. We continue with Mayor Mike here. Spitzer had his State of the State this week, and one of the things he's attempting to tackle, something that he didn't want to do at least last year, maybe he's seen the light, and that is cap property taxes. I understand that property taxes here in the city are going to be going up. At least that's the look now.
Well, I don't know that they're going to go up. First thing we're going to do for the city is try to reduce spending. We've asked all agencies, or told all agencies, they must cut spending this 6 month period that we're in from Jan 1st to June 30th by 2.5%, and they're all doing that. And then we've told them they've got to be ready to cut spending next year by 5%. That'll be a little tougher, but we should come somewhat close to that. And that then we'll see depends on Wall Street profits, because that slows down our tax revenues when they don't make any money, and real estate transactions where people sell real estate, they pay a tax on that. And if that's less than what it has been last year, which it looks like it will be, that's a problem as well. So we'll see. Property taxes in New York City are fundamentally different than property taxes in the rest of the state. Property taxes in the rest of the state go to fund education. Property taxes in New York just get mixed in with everything. And I've always thought that when you have a dedicated tax and you say this is what it's going to go for, it's somewhat a little bait and switch or shell game, because all money is really fungible, and you see upstate when they get money from the state, then they tax for other things. My hope is that we'll be in decent shape. It's certainly going to be a struggle. We know we have gaps in the out years. We always do when revenue goes down, and the question is, have we saved as much as we can when revenue goes up? And you say, okay, well, you should never expand the size of government, and there are people that believe that. But the bottom line is, when revenues go up, the city council wants to spend more, and they have a say, and every agency that reports to the mayor wants to spend more, and you have to listen to them. The public wants more things, and they say in good times we can afford it. The trouble is what happens when bad times come, which they invariably do, and then nobody remembers that they were the ones screaming to spend more, and you just can't cut back that easily. But I think we're in reasonably good shape, and the one thing you can rest assured, John, we will run as tight a ship as we can. We have a hiring freeze in. We are scrutinizing every single request from every agency, but we're not going to walk away from continuing to bring down crime and improve the schools and the parks and the culturals and all of the things, because that's our future, and that's what gets people to come here.
All right, Mr. Mayor, I know you can't speak for individuals, but my question here is, I mean, what you just described is the way most of us work, that when our revenue's at home or the checkbook doesn't have a balance that's sufficient, we start to cut back. We don't go out to eat as much, or whatever. We don't drive the car as much. Whatever methods we do to balance our budget and afford our lifestyle. Why is it that government, state, federal, the rest of them, will refuse to do what you did and say to your agencies, okay, let's cut back 2.5%. Next year, let's figure on 5%. Let's see what we can do. We never hear that.
Well, I can sit here and say, you know, we're great and everybody else is bad, but there is a little bit of a sidebar which you should know about. Number one, we have to, by law, the city has to balance its budget on a cash basis at the end of the year. We must be in balance. And if not, then the state would take over really running the city. We'd have the control board, and that you obviously can't let happen. So there is a fiscal discipline imposed on the city, and one that hopefully we will keep going. It came out of the Big Mac financing, and we are trying to keep that going after the Big Mac financing so that no government in the city, mine included, would have the right to spend more than they take in. Now, there are some, you can always play a few games, but fundamentally, there's very few games that the city could play. So it's been a great discipline for the city, for me and for all of the predecessors that I had.
Are we making a mistake, Mr. Mayor, by not putting that sort of discipline on the rest of our government?
Well, the state government, the laws there, roughly, if I understand it, they have to pass a balanced budget. Now, a cynic would say is they decide how much that they're going to spend, and then they estimate revenues of exactly that or slightly greater. I think that's not quite fair to them. They do have some outside sources that help them estimate revenues. But nevertheless, even if they are totally honest in trying to estimate the expenses and the revenues, and they're going to be in balance, during the year there's always the problem of what happens if the revenues come in less. And you don't have to do anything. They can borrow, and that's one of the things that's happened to the state over the years. And this governor, the previous governor, the governors going all the way back, they've always, you know, they and the legislature, nobody likes to say no. Nobody likes to have people standing on the steps of City Hall or the state capitol and screaming, "Don't cut my program, cut somebody else's." And, of course, the other guys also on the other part of the steps screaming the same thing. The federal government's different in the sense that they can just print money. Now, long term, it is very bad for the economy. There was an article today in one of the financial newspapers, the FT, about Moody's arguing that the U.S. government's AAA credit rating may be in jeopardy. I think that's probably a little bit overstating it. But if we continue to spend a lot more than we take in at the federal level, there's just no question what the economics of the world are. You can't do that. And then it becomes a big political thing. It's Republicans versus Democrats. I don't want taxes. Nobody wants taxes. No, I don't want deficits. Nobody wants deficits. I don't want to cut back. Nobody wants to cut back. I've got to have something for my program. Everybody's got another program. And so there's not a lot of discipline at the federal level until one day we're going to wake up and rediscover that the discipline has been imposed on us by the rest of the world, which we in this country seem to have forgotten, and we're not going to be able to.
We're starting to see that, aren't we? Aren't we starting to see that with the value of the dollar around the world?
The value of the dollar tells you what people think. It is, John, I keep coming back to the same thing, but we are exporting out of this country science and education and entrepreneurship. With this closing our borders, people can't come here who would be the ones that would generate the jobs we need so badly in the rest of this country, and we're making a terrible mistake, and we have destroyed our relationships around the world. In New York City, foreign tourism is up, but it's the only city, I think, in the United States. Tourism, foreign tourism to the United States, even with the very low weak dollar, has gone down, and that really is scary, because if the dollar starts to improve, we're going to get no tourists, and we need tourists to come and bring in money and add to our culture and cuisine and shop. And you know, a lot of people work in stores and hotels and restaurants. They depend on tourism. But there's this anti-immigration movement that is just, I think, frightening, and I've said this repeatedly, and there's a dislike for America among the people that live in the countries that we call allies. And if you do surveys, and it's just every study shows the same thing.
But you're not advocating opening open borders or just, you know, willy-nilly.
No, I think, you know, listen, I've talked about this ad nauseum. I don't think anybody wants to hear it again. The first thing you do is you have a Social Security card that you can't just Xerox. You have to put a fingerprint on it. And then you enforce the laws with every company and say you can't employ undocumented. And that will get a lot fewer people coming across the borders, which makes your border security a lot easier. You give permanent status, not citizenship, but permanent status to the 12 million who are here. We could not deport them if we wanted to. We don't have an army big enough, and it would be a disaster for the economy, which would close instantly. And you'd be a piranha in the world if you tried. That would be the biggest deportation in the history of humanity. Can't do that. And then you've got to give visas to 400,000 or 500,000 people to come here. And it was interesting, in I think it was last week's Economist, they had a great section on immigration and articles. England, for example, they have policies. We want X number of engineers, Y number of teachers, Z number of agricultural workers. We want a certain percentage of people that speak this language and that language and whatever. This country should be in control of its own borders. But we've got to get real. We're not going to deport the 12 million people. We're not going to be able to close our borders unless we take away the ability for people who are here illegally to work. And that requires giving businesses the ability to know quickly and easily and accurately who is and who is not a citizen. So that's where the modern technology comes in, with the Social Security card, with the fingerprints. And we desperately need an influx of entrepreneurs and people in all different parts of our economy. And if we don't, John, you're not going to be able to collect Social Security, because the birth rate in this country is so low, there's not going to be any workers paying into Social Security, so Social Security can pay you when you retire.
And yet, and I know that this was probably, I'm guessing this was probably the conversations out when you were in Oklahoma this past week, about the fact that nobody's talking about this. There isn't a single candidate that is talking about Social Security and the problem.
No, Social Security, no. In all fairness, Huckabee and McCain talked about, stood up for immigration, and both have gotten vilified for it. Nobody else is willing to do it. A couple of people have mentioned Social Security, but it's all tied together. This country just does not have a future. In a world where we have to globally fight terrorism, in a world where we globally have to trade, a lot of the jobs in America are jobs that are created because we can export our products. If we don't have open borders and free trade, those people will be out of work. You can't have in a world where science and technology and medicine is global, or fighting to protect the environment is global. There's just no ability to go it alone, and sadly, that seems to be one of the things people more and more want to do in parts of...
There's some sort of feel-good there. I'm not quite sure what it's about. I've got to take a break, Mr. Mayor, but I have in front of me on my desk here in the studio yesterday's front page from USA Today, and there is their cover story is on the business, the immigration law, strict immigration law in Oklahoma, and businesses are whining that their illegal population is moving because they can't work there any longer. So it's both sides of the coin all the time. Mr. Mayor, sit tight if you would. We'll be right back at 77 WABC, half hour time, a news update, George Webber. Before this half hour of the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg is finished, you'll get the opportunity to ask the questions, 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, I don't know if you happened to hear Eric Hastings' commercial there about the Cunard Lines, Queens, three of them here in New York. And it's interesting, isn't it, that they come here and they want to use as the backdrop of sort of launching their all-new boats the Statue of Liberty.
New York is still the city. The Statue of Liberty is still the icon, or one of the icons of the city. And, you know, this is great for us. People come here from around the world. And while they're on a cruise ship, they probably don't spend an awful lot of money, because they tend to sleep and eat on the ships while they're in harbor. But they do see New York, and they go home and say, hey, New York is safe and clean and affordable and easy to get to. And that's why this year, or in 07, we estimate we had something like 46 million visitors, an all-time record.
That's good news. I hate to keep bringing this up week in and week out, and I'm sure you hate to keep answering about it, but it is the big story, and it will be the big story. I'm talking about congestion pricing. Some of the alternatives that the commission is looking at is lowering the zone from, in the 80s down to 60th Street, tolls on the East and Harlem River bridges, and restrictions on coming into New York at all based on license plate. How do you feel about those alternatives?
Well, the license plate one I don't think works. Number one, keep in mind, we're trying to do two things. We want to raise money for mass transit, and we want to limit people bringing automobiles in. The license plate thing raises not a dime. As a matter of fact, it would hurt very much because some people wouldn't come in and they couldn't shop, and then we wouldn't have the sales taxes and the employment taxes of people who work in the city to serve them. Two, cities that have tried changing license plates, you know, odd numbers on odd days, even numbers on these days, whatever, people just buy two cars. And so, you know, you're kidding yourself to think that that really does anything. One of the plans is to raise parking fees. That probably would dissuade a handful of people from coming. But it's sort of regressive, number one. And number two, it wouldn't generate any money for mass transit. So you're sort of left with three things: the original plan that we had proposed, a modified version of that, and then the third one is tolling all of the bridges, which, and all three essentially do the same thing. The question is where you collect, and there's some small differences. The bridge tolls would be a lot easier to administer, and people would understand it a lot better, and you can get around the congestion thing. You just sell a one version, a one ride easy pass, you know, a couple miles away, and people stop at the store and buy them and put it in their windshield and they could come in. That works. The congestion plan that we proposed works. A modified version of that would work. But Mark Shaw, who was a former deputy mayor of the first deputy mayor of the city during our first administration, has at Shelley Silver's request really formed this panel. They've been working diligently. They've come up with five different things. They are talking to the public, and they are, under the agreement, supposed to come back with a recommendation for the Assembly and Senate, who has to approve this, because they have to approve everything we do when it comes to charging and fining people. And they're charged to come up with this on January 31st. And let's see what they do. But they certainly, nobody should complain about how much effort and time and the dedication they put in. And they've assembled a group of very smart people. And we'll see what happens. But we have to do something, John. We're strangling our economy. People are going to really start feeling this more and more. And we've got to reduce the number of cars that come in. The only ways you can do that is really to provide good mass transit. The only ways you can do that is to raise money to do it. And so it's sort of all one big circular thing. And then we have $354 million, remember, that the federal government has promised us if by, I think it's the beginning of March, we pass a plan that is either the plan that we had originally proposed or one that does essentially the same thing. And hopefully it's not going to, it will get done on time, or we'll lose this money.
One of the centerpieces of the Bloomberg mayoralty has been, and I know that you and Joel Klein have worked incredibly hard on it, obviously improving education here in New York City to that end, responsibility, merit pay, whatever you want to call it, grading, taking responsibility for one's work and the resultant effects of that on students, making them better. You graded the schools. Now I read that the UFT and Randy Weingarten don't care for it so much, and they want to grade them themselves.
Well, you know, it's fascinating how far we have come. Here we have the union wanting to grade schools, whether they disagree with our grades or not. They have come a full circle, and I think that that just shows great cooperation between the union and their members and the city and its administration working together to try to improve the schools for the kids. Now, I think the plan that we have, the way we grade them, is the appropriate one. But I think the most amazing thing is that the conventional wisdom is, oh, the teachers union will stop any reforms, and that's not been true in this city. Teachers in the last 6 years have gotten a 43% raise compounded over three separate contracts, and the city has gotten a much better school system and a much better ability to manage the system, and the results are there, and this is a great sign of cooperation between the city and the union and the taxpayers and the union members.
Which one of these do you think will win out, or will both run parallel?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose the union can grade anything they want. You can't stop them from doing that. I think that the grading system that we have, if you talk to the public, it is very popular among parents and non-parents. It is fair. It measures what we're trying to do, not how well the kids are doing today, but how much improvement they've made. Because if you have a school, John, where every kid gets a 775 on his SATs, you don't want to say, oh, all these kids are smart, there's no reason to improve that school. No, you want to keep moving it up. They could get 800s or 850s. I don't grade them that way, but the concept is you got to improve. And if you have a school where, you know, you've got a bunch of kids who have really special needs or have been left out of the mainstream for a long time in terms of not having good schools and not having some family support, which, you know, some of us are lucky enough to have and some aren't, and you take kids that read at fourth grade level and you move them up to sixth grade level, you've really done something amazing. And the fact that they're only at sixth grade level doesn't mean that's not a good school. That's the kind of school where the teachers and the administration have worked together and have really put their heart and soul in it and showed results. So what you want to do is not measure where they are, you measure how much improvement, and every year, each school, some schools say, oh, well, you know, if we do this, we're going to have to work harder next year. Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly what the public expects. That's what our kids deserve.
Mr. Mayor, there's a story that I need some clarification. I'm glad you're here so that we can do just that, that there was a story about a bill before the city council, I guess it is, about the city controlling the permitting of biological and chemical detection equipment?
The issue is the following, John. Some people, some of the legislators say, oh, everybody should have a radiation detector or a chemical detector or this or that. If you do, the chaos that you would have would be phenomenal. The police would be called to respond to 1,000 false alarms the first day.
These would be, excuse me, these would be personal alarms?
Well, personal or every company or whatever.
Okay. All right.
I mean, if the first day they'll respond 1,000 times, the second day 2,000, the third day nobody's out there directing traffic, fighting crime, working against terrorism, and everything stops, and then the next time when there really is something, nobody's going to respond. You just cannot have that kind of chaos. And so what the police department wants to do, the city wants to do, is to regulate so you have standards and we know who has them and where to go, and so that if there is an alarm, we can check to make sure it's not a false alarm. False alarms are really disastrous because not only do you waste time, eventually people stop paying attention. And that's the last thing that we want.
Okay, where do you think this is going to end up, and when might it end up? Do you know?
Do you have a sense? I think we'll be able to just explain to people why you just can't have everybody having their own standard of, you know, your wristwatch, if it's got a radium dial, will set off a Geiger counter. You know, every time somebody walks by your building with a wristwatch, do you really want to have an alarm go out and call the police? Pretty soon nobody's going to, when you tell them to evacuate, not going to do it.
No, I understand the problem, and it needs some control, and it's one of those things that most of us never even think about, but that's why they're paying you and the police commissioner and everybody else the big bucks.
All the big bucks.
All the big bucks, that dollar a year that we pay you. is your Coney Island plan in trouble? We talked about it at great fanfare here, but I keep hearing and seeing little things sort of being chopped away at it.
Coney Island deserves better. It is a area that has a wonderful past and has great potential, but has fallen on hard times is the nicest ways to phrase it. And for the life of me, I don't understand why everybody wants to stop any development. Oh, that's not fair. They don't want to stop any development. They just don't want to stop whatever development you propose. There is a developer who owns a big piece of the property. We've been trying to negotiate with him. And if the city loses the opportunity to keep Coney Island, Coney Island, once you destroy it, you can never rebuild it again, and it would be a great loss to the city. And it just reminds me, there are people who are always opposed to, they're always in favor of change, but opposed to any one change, and I think you might see a little bit of that here.
Do I sense that real estate owner is not cooperating?
Let me say that we're always trying to work things out collaboratively, and without a lot of fanfare.
All right. Real fast, and then we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to take our phone calls at 1-800-848-WABC if you want to jump on here. I got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 1-800-848-WABC. To the detectors, chemical, biological, and the response, NYFD response time continues to improve.
The fire department is doing a great job, is the bottom line. Fire deaths are down in the last 6 years dramatically. The firefighters have more training than ever before. Today, if you become a firefighter, the school that you attend at the ROC, as they call it, on the Fire Academy on Randall's Island, is double the length of time that it was only a couple of years ago. We've literally gone from, I think it's like 13 to 26 weeks of training, and so the firefighters that we are turning out of school today have skills that those that came before them never had, and that's great for the public. The one thing that we haven't done is we haven't, and probably never will, is eliminate the danger in the job. And this last week I was at a funeral for a lieutenant who died in a fire, and very tragically left a wife and a 20-month-old kid, and a wife pregnant with another kid. And those kids are never going to know their father. But he put his life on the line for the rest of us, and he was a fire lieutenant with a lot of training. He had worked in the most difficult fire, busy firehouses. He loved fighting fires, and he transferred from one to another to get the best, the most busy firehouse he could. And unfortunately, I don't know why God took his life, but he did.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. We'll get back with questions from our listeners in just a moment at 77 WABC. All right, just a couple of minutes left, Mr. Mayor. Let's go right to the telephone. It's going to start at the top of the list, line one. We got Jack on the line. Hello, Jack. Your question for the mayor.
Hello, yes. Recently this week, I just found out that the MTA is owned by the city. So if the MTA is owned by the city, why can't the mayor regulate the price?
Well, it's not owned by the city. It is a state agency, which I'm told, I don't know if it's true, but I'm told was created four decades ago, because the elected officials never wanted to answer the public why it always takes more money for less service. So everybody had this idea, well, we'll have this independent group, and they can run it, and then it shields all the elected officials. The truth of the matter is it really doesn't shield them, because it's very political. Now, the city does have 4 votes on the MTA board, and then the governor has a bunch of votes, and then there are partial votes, so that some of the other counties like Nassau, Suffolk, Westchester, Rockland, I think they all have a part of a vote, something along those lines. It's because, you know, remember, the MTA not only is the subway and bus system in New York City, it's Metro North and Long Island Railroad as well. And so there's a lot. There's no easy answer to how many votes. And then the governor would say, "But wait a second! A lot of the appointees were appointed by the previous governor, so that they're not his appointees." And then there's the question of should the governor and the mayor and whatever tell their appointees how to vote, or should they be truly independent? And I don't think anybody in a practical world thinks that they would be totally independent, even if the governor and the mayor tried to make them independent. So there's no easy answer. The city has some impact, and I did support the governor when he wanted to raise the fares. I thought, given that we want to spend money to improve mass transit and the transit workers need to get paid and we want to attract good people, it was a small percentage increase. Nobody likes to stand up and raise anything costs, but the bottom line is, if you want a system, somebody's going to pay for it. And the city is putting a couple billion dollars into constructing the extension of the 7 line. The state is putting in a lot of money. And the strap hangers, sadly, have to be part of that as well. So
it's kind of like making sausage. You don't really want to watch it, but it tastes pretty good at the
end.
Well,
you know, in all fairness, the MTA does a pretty good job on balance. I think they could do better. They think they could do better. But we do, I don't know, something like 300 million people a day.
No, it's phenomenal. It truly is. Mr. Mayor, the theme music is up behind us. That means it's time for us to go, but we'll regroup next Friday.
Looking forward to it, John.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg right here at 77 WABC. My apologies to those on the telephone. Next week we'll get some more phone calls in than this week. So busy, so much to say. Stick around. That continues. Lots of talk coming up.